I'm Mark Golub, and in the news, some rather surprising Jewish statistics to come out of the 2020 presidential elections in terms of the number of Jews who voted for Donald Trump. Jonathan Tobin, who was the editor-in-chief of Commentary Magazine for 8 years, he's now editor-in-chief of JNS, the Jewish News Syndicate, one of the best online sources of news and opinion on the American Jewish scene today. Jonathan has published a superb piece setting forth the statistics and then analyzing what they might mean for contemporary Jewish life. For example, 4 years ago, Donald Trump won only 24% of the Jewish vote. This election, 30% of the Jewish community voted for Donald Trump, up 25%. And in the state of Florida, which has a larger and older Jewish demographic, 41% of Floridian Jews voted for Donald Trump. And perhaps most dramatic of all, among Jewish voters who consider Israel and foreign policy issues to be their priority, 87% of those Jews voted for Donald Trump. That's 87%. Overall, these statistics indicate that the percentage of Jewish voters for Vice President Biden is the lowest total for any Democrat since 1988, when Michael Dukakis ran against George H.W. Bush. Well, it's the best showing for a Republican since that same year, 1988. So what's it all mean that more Jews voted for Donald Trump in this election than did so 4 years ago? Well, for some analysis, we turn, as we so often do, to one of American Jewry's foremost columnists and commentators, the editor-in-chief of the online news service JNS, Jonathan Tobin. Jonathan, thank you so much for joining us again on JBS.
Thanks for having me on, Mark. It's a pleasure.
So, Jonathan, were you personally surprised by the 25% rise in Jewish support for Donald Trump?
I can't say that I am. I thought it was likely that he would do better this time. Simply because he had a real record on Jewish issues, certainly on Israel, to run on. You know, you love him or hate him, say what you like about Donald Trump. But the one thing that I think is incontrovertible is that he turned out to be, surprisingly perhaps, the most pro-Israel president that the United States has ever had since Israel's founding. It's just very clear. He did things that no other president did. He moved the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. How many politicians and presidents had promised to do that? And in the end, they listened to the foreign policy establishment that told them that the world would go on fire if it happened, all the terrible things. And they wouldn't, even those sympathetic to Israel, like Bill Clinton or George W. Bush. In the end, they didn't do it, let alone do things like endorsing Israeli sovereignty on the Golan Heights, to trying to hold the Palestinian Authority accountable for its support of terrorism, withdrawing from the very dangerous Iran nuclear deal. He just, down the line, he repudiated Barack Obama, his predecessor Barack Obama's belief that there needed to be more daylight between the United States and Israel. And instead, he brought the two countries closer together and paradoxically also helped create peace, helped broker peace agreements, three in the last couple of months with Bahrain, United Arab Emirates, and Sudan, with promise of more to come. He had a real record to run on. And I think, you know, before we even go deeper into that, we have to understand why he did it, how that happened. And it was something about his character. Now, that same poll that you cited that I wrote about, so that those who didn't, you know, who thought that character was the most important thing that they voted on, they didn't vote. They voted for Biden, not for Trump.
Right, right.
But there's an element of Donald Trump's character, his instincts, that you know, caused him to do all these pro-Israel, create all these pro-Israel stands. And it's that he doesn't trust experts. He doesn't trust the establishment. And the foreign policy establishment had been against all of these things. They had bought into myths that the Palestinian conflict was the center of all problems in the Middle East. As John Kerry, a former Secretary of State, said, no, 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 there can be no normalization or peace between Arab nations and Israel. You have to create a Palestinian state first. That the key to peace in the Middle East was U.S. pressure on Israel. He rejected all of that because he didn't believe what those people said about anything.
Right.
You know, it's basically he looked at them and said, nah, I'm better off doing the opposite. And in this case, you know, his distrust of experts isn't always perhaps the right thing to do, but certainly on the Middle East, he was dead right. He was absolutely right. So, as I said, he had something to run on. But the split in the Jewish vote, and we know that the overwhelming majority of American Jews are, A, they're non-Orthodox, and they have a conception of Judaism that is linked to an idea of social justice that is very consistent with the standards of liberal Democrats. The, you know, the old joke that Reform Judaism, it's an unfair joke, but it's an old one that for many American Jews, Judaism is the Democratic Party platform with holidays thrown in. And as unfair as that is to non-Orthodox Judaism, that is how a lot of people think. That is their instincts. And so their support for the Democrats and for liberal politics is instinctual. It is to the core of their identity.
All right, I want to point something out, and then I want you to comment on it. You were not an enthusiast of Donald Trump before he was elected. You were very critical of his style and the way he comported himself, and you were worried about what he would be as president. And many people who saw what his policies began to be, evolved, they would watch what he was doing. They said two things, and I want your comment on both. One, if Donald Trump ever gets angry at Israel or the prime minister, somehow Netanyahu does something to just blank him off, he'll turn on Israel in a heartbeat. And number two, the reason he does anything for Israel is because he is trying to satisfy his base within the ecumenical, I'm sorry, with the evangelical Christian community. So remembering how you felt about Trump before he was elected, how do you respond to those two criticisms? By the way, people waited every moment for Trump to do a 180 on Israel. It never happened. Why do you think that's true? Why do you think they were waiting for it to happen? And do you believe that Trump's motivation for Israel, to supporting Israel, was basically for the evangelical community?
Well, those are a few really good questions. I'll start with the one about myself in terms of my own opinions. You're absolutely right. I looked at Donald Trump and I saw someone who wasn't presidential, who didn't seem to know a lot about the issues. I didn't think the presidency was an entry-level job. I didn't like his style. After all, I'm a member of the educated classes. And the core of Donald Trump's attitude is to give the middle finger to the educated, the governing classes of this country. It took a lot of us a long while to figure out why so many people liked him. You know, my colleague Selena Zito famously wrote in 2015, it took us a lot of us time to absorb it, but she said, Trump's critics take him literally, but not seriously. Trump's supporters take him seriously, but not literally.
Exactly.
You know, brilliant. And as true today as it was 5 years ago. But yeah, I looked at Donald Trump. I can recall a conversation I had at the Values Voter Summit in September 2016, at the height of the campaign. I was speaking there and had a chat with Gary Bauer, the head of that Christian evangelical organization. Just for our viewers, the Values Voters Summit is like the General Assembly of the Jewish Federations or the Reform Biennial times 50. You know, it's a lot bigger. And I asked Gary, wonderful fellow, true supporter of Israel, I might add, who was all in on Trump. And I said, why do you think he's going to do all these things that you want him to do, whether about religious liberty, conservative political stance, or on Israel, which is very important to evangelical voters, as you say. And he kind of shrugged his shoulders and said, well, on the one hand, what alternative do we have? Well, certainly Hillary Clinton isn't going to do what we want. And on the other, he said, well, I have a feeling about him that he's going to keep his word. Gary was right. He did keep his word. The notion that he's going to turn on Israel, well, it's rooted in something that's true, in that Donald Trump is not his idea of alliances and U.S. interactions with other countries. It's not sentimental. As much as I think he does seem to have a basic affection for Israel, a basic affection for the Jewish people. After all, he has Jewish grandchildren.
Yes.
His daughter, his beloved daughter, who's very close to him, converted to Judaism when she married Jared, before she married Jared
Kushner. An Orthodox Jew.
Yes, an Orthodox Jew raising an observant Jewish family in his inner circle.
They go to day school. His kids,
yeah,
his grandkids.
Day school students, everything, the whole package. Right. So the notion that he's just this anti-Semite waiting to turn on the Jews, it was always nuts. It was always politically inspired.
Do you remember, but wait, on JBS before the election, you were very critical of him.
Yes, I was.
Do you remember, was there a moment, was there an incident where you said to yourself, gee, you know, maybe I just was off base here?
I think it was a series of moments. Listen, in January 2017, I wrote the same words that I had written in January 2009 when Barack Obama became president. And I wasn't too keen on Barack Obama either. I didn't share too many of his ideological positions, but I wrote in January 2009 that he's the president now. I will support him when possible, oppose him when necessary. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, when I was able to support him, I did, speaking of Barack Obama, but there were precious few examples of Barack Obama policies that I could support. By contrast, and it was clear immediately that Donald Trump was going to give me so many things that I could support, very few things that I opposed. And even those stands that he took, which I really distrusted, his stands on trade, some of his skepticism about NATO, he turned out to be right. Hmm. He said he was going to renegotiate NAFTA, which isn't a Jewish issue, not really part of our brief here.
I understand.
And I said, there's no way he can do that. Right. And yet he did, successfully. He was skeptical about NATO, and yet he strengthened NATO. Mm-hmm. He didn't destroy NATO, blow it up. He strengthened it. When he told the other NATO allies, you know, you have to pay your own way, now, he wasn't the first to say that. Obama said that. Bush said that. But he was the first one that they took seriously. Because, as I said, his view of alliances is transactional, not sentimental. So they took him at his word. And with respect to Israel, certainly, his policy was consistent from the start. There was no doubting
Absolutely.
It. And the truth is, as much as, you know, I would say I had good reason to doubt. And speaking as a conservative, you know, political conservative, not just a, you know, supporter of Israel, I doubted his conservative credentials in 2016 because he had none.
Right.
And yet, he has governed as a conservative. And I would even argue, and indeed we're speaking 2 days after the election, looks like he's going to lose. We'll see, you know, for re-election. But I would argue that if this is it, if it's these 4 years, in many ways, you could argue that he has been the most successful conservative. Not only was he did he govern as a conservative, he's been the most successful conservative president, more so than George W. Bush or the elder Bush. He gave conservatives what they wanted. And I think it's very clear, you know, it's a cliche. You've read it 1,000 times in the New York Times about how conservatives sold their souls to Donald Trump. Au contraire. If anybody sold his soul, it was Donald Trump, because he flipped on every, you know, he's a New York real estate mogul liberal.
Right.
And He embraced every stand that conservatives have called for, whether on religious liberty, judges, economics, you name it. And he delivered. Conservatives stuck with him. Republicans, it's worth quoting. You're talking another poll, and it's worth quoting that the Gallup tracking poll for support for the president, breaking it down by party, even in the last weeks, even at the height of the pandemic, when things weren't going so well for the administration, Donald Trump was getting up to 94% support from Republicans. That's not just more than any other Republican president. That's more than Ronald Reagan had. And it happened because he delivered for conservatives. You asked me why I supported his policies. Well, because he did the things that I had been writing and advocating for all along. So, I mean, that's the answer to your question. There's no one moment. It's nothing but moments.
Okay.
On anti-Semitism, you name it.
Yep. You've said it very, very well. So I want to ask a different kind of question. The people who despise Donald Trump and the Jewish community believe that he is evil incarnate, that he is an anti-Semite. You have already spoken to that. It seems to me to be a silly claim. You can be critical of Donald Trump for all type of things, but I don't know how you ever call what he has been an anti-Semite. And yet there are people in the Jewish community who have likened Donald Trump to a Nazi, to Hitler, to Goering. I'm curious to know, and you, by the way, you do reference this in your piece. You say this was, I can't remember the exact word, whether it was the nastiest. It was a nasty campaign. And people should know, you're seeing this Monday night. We tape this at the end of last week. But and as we tape it, as Jonathan just said, it looks overwhelming like Donald Trump will lose. But neither Jonathan nor I can proclaim that. But it's in that spirit that we're talking right now. But Jonathan, you referenced the fact that you found this election to be nasty in general. And one of the ways you cited, or one of the things you cited, was this painting Donald Trump as a Nazi. And when I have said that's an inappropriate comparison, in some way it's a blasphemy of the Holocaust, I received very critical mail from many viewers. And I'm wondering, first of all, how you look at that issue, Donald Trump as Nazi. And I'm wondering whether you received any critical mail for the stands you took.
I'll answer the last part first. Mark, I get critical stuff. I get abuse on Twitter every day for everything I write. That is the nature. But that lets me circle back to the beginning. And we have to understand, we are living in a country where we're a bifurcated nation. And by that I mean we are split as Americans as well as Jews, into two warring tribes, not just political parties, but warring tribes who have lost the ability to listen to each other, who no longer credit each other with good motives, who demonize each other reflexively. We don't watch, listen, or read the same media. We take different views on virtually everything that happens. As I cited in another one of my columns, or I think maybe in the one you're referencing, opposition to intermarriage, in the Jewish community, we speak a lot about intermarriage vis-a-vis faith or interracial marriage. In the United States, opposition to both of those has just plummeted. Most Americans have no problem with their children marrying someone from another faith or even another race. The kind of intermarriage they're against, though, and against it by large majorities, is if their child were to marry someone from a different political party. Now, that sounds crazy, right?
Yes.
Absolutely crazy.
Yes.
And yet, that's exactly a vast majority of Americans tracking. Gallup has tracked this for over 50 years.
How did that happen? Jonathan, how did that happen and what does it mean to you?
It happened for one very simple reason. Because politics has replaced religion, the space, the role that religion played in the lives of most Americans in the last generation. We now view politics the way Americans and people in general used to think about religion. It's that important to us. We, you know, we choose a team to be on, a side to be on, and we view the people in, you know, who vote for a different candidate, not worship a different religion, you know, God or of a different race. We see people who vote for a different candidate as the other. This is consistent throughout American society. It's consistent throughout Jewish life.
That's what pains me. I don't care that it is typical of America as a whole. I always hold the Jewish community to a higher standard. It pains me enormously that Jews are pitted against Jews over politics. And not, it's, I agree 100% with you. It's okay for two Jews to have very differing views on Biden, on Trump, on anything, but for there to be enmity and there's a suggestion the other one is venal has been so disappointing to me, and I'm surprised it happens in the Jewish community. And you can say to me, you know, maybe just a naivete, but I am, Jews are supposed to be smarter than that, Jonathan. Is there anything else going on here in the Jewish community that would prompt Jews to be so myopic as you're describing?
Well, I think we're swimming in the, you know, American Jews are swimming in the same sea as other Americans. This is the nature of American culture right now. It's cuts through everything. It's reflected in our entertainment. It's reflected in, as I say, the news that we consume. It cuts through everything. So it would be really unusual if Jews were exempt from it, and we're not. In fact, we exemplify it perhaps more than other people because religion does play a part in it, because there is a large, you know, one of the breaking points is Orthodox, non-Orthodox.
Right.
As I said earlier, non-Orthodox Jews tend to identify liberal politics as sort of consonant with their religious faith, to the extent
Correct.
That they have religious faith. And it breeds in Jews. I mean, you know, anti-Semitism is, you know, fear of anti-Semitism is baked into our political, cultural DNA. And the truth is, we're as vulnerable to anybody to demonizing our opponents. And with respect to Donald Trump, it's the anybody I don't like is Hitler rule.
Right. By
and
way, what,
you know,
what
it was
your...
shocking. Let me just say, it was shocking when the Jewish Democratic Council did a web ad basically calling Trump Hitler.
Yes.
And yet it got very little pushback. Even Abe Foxman, the former head of the ADL, somebody, you know, I sometimes agreed with, sometimes disagreed with, but whom I respect enormously, he had no problem with it because he was so against Trump. You know, the argument goes that by coarsening our discourse, by sort of giving the middle finger to so many elements of sort of the American establishment, the educated classes, the political governing classes, that Trump has sort of unleashed the demons of hate. I think that's a very weak, unsubstantiated argument. Certainly he hasn't raised up our discourse, but that's entirely true. But the notion that you can connect the dots between Trump and white supremacist hate has always been a canard. It's always been a political argument. And it's one, this gets me to a very important point. When I speak of two different Jewish tribes, and we have those of us who are observers of U.S.-Israel relations, of the relations between American Jews and Israeli Jews, we understand that we're two different tribes. And we speak of, you know, the old UJA slogan, we are one, which even in its heyday was more aspirational than descriptive. We know that we are not one. We are two different, you know, Israeli Jews are a very different culture, very different in many ways than American Jews. But within American Jewry, the divide along politics, which encompasses religion as well as political ideas, you know, there is a minority of non-Orthodox Jews who are politically conservative, that the divide between them and, you know, their liberal cousins, friends, relatives has become so stark. I mean, it is, in a sense, it is really astonishing that a candidate, a person like Donald Trump, who is truly believed by maybe two-thirds of American Jews to be a Nazi, in spite of being such a friend of Israel, despite of having Jewish grandchildren and a record of opposition to anti-Semitism. They believe he's a Nazi. So with so many people, American Jews believe he's a Nazi, we can get at least 30%, and more than that in some areas, not only, you know, don't think he's a Nazi, they think he's Israel's best friend. They think he was worthy of his of re-election. Indeed, you know, many Jews who voted for him, that 24% in 2016, did so by holding their nose because, you know, Trump was a heavy lift. You know, he wasn't with what anybody was used to. This time, there was not much nose holding. In fact, these were very enthusiastic votes for Trump. It may have really helped him win in Florida because that was a statistically significant group.
I understand. But he also did very much better than people assumed he would do with Latinos and with African Americans. I'm almost out of time, so this is going to be a very quick question and answer. In any way, do you feel the Jews who voted for Donald Trump are in some way racist?
That is exactly what I'm talking about when it comes to demonizing our opponents, demonizing people, refusing to accept that they have good motives. Of course, they're not racist. They like Donald Trump for any number of reasons, because he embodied traditional values, not personally, but in his stands, because he supported free enterprise, because he was against mobs rioting and mostly peaceful protests, because he's a friend of Israel, and because he embodied a new Republican Party, which is embracing the working class rather than, you know, trying to victimize them. The Republicans have kind of realigned, and they're much stronger, and yes, even more attractive to minority voters because of it, which really sets them up for success in the future, in my mind. So this effort to demonize Republican voters and Jewish Republican voters, this says something very sick about our culture in general, political culture in general, and about our inability to listen, to learn from our opponents. You know, I've always believed that which we had in common, both as Americans and as Jews, was stronger than that which, you know, was stronger than that which divided us. Sadly, those kinds of attitudes call my faith in that very important principle into question.
Jonathan, once again, I end where I began. You wrote a great piece. You write great pieces all the time, and it's always to JBS's benefit anytime I can get you on. I wish you kol tov v'hatzlacha. You stay safe and well during this pandemic, and you know I'll be calling you often. Thank you very much, Jonathan.
Thanks, Mark.
Be well. Analysis by the editor-in-chief of the online news service JNS, the Jewish News Syndicate, Jonathan Tobin. I hope you found his perspective enlightening, even if you disagree. And I hope you all receive a JNS update on your computer or mobile device every day. As always, my thanks to our director, Sloan Copeland, JBS Managing Director, Dara Golub, Transmission Manager, Jonathan McDevitt, and to the producer of In the News, Carol Lilienthal. Until the next time, I'm Mark Golub. Be well, my friends.